Gallagher's gonna have the news.
It's Monday, December 9th. It's LA Podcast. I'm Hayes Davenport. I'm here with Alyssa Walker and Scott Frazier. Scott, do you want to share the little cultural point that you just made privately?
There was a helicopter passing by, and I was going to make a Los Angeles November 2019 joke, and now I realize that that's a joke about the past mm-hmm. instead of a joke about the future.
I had to unpin my tweet. Yeah. That was about that. So now we're in the future, officially.
Yep, to Brave New World.
It is raining here a lot, like it did
in the movie.
It was
the rainiest November we've had in a long time.
In 17 years. I think you heard that from me on this show.
Oh, interesting. I don't actually listen to this show.
Anyone have an LA story from this kind of gross week?
Gross in many ways.
Yeah, it was pretty gross.
There was some egregiousness.
Yeah, I was like walking around just sort of feeling a malaise that I couldn't tell exactly where it was coming from.
The holidays. Where,
from current event, that's definitely what it was. Yes. LA stories? Scott defers to Alyssa.
I was just wanting to give a shout out to Los Angeles Walks. I went to their big annual fundraiser last night. They honored 5 people who are doing incredible work in pedestrian advocacy. They've been around for a long time. I was on the board for a while, but they've kind of seen this resurgence of energy. They have a new director. They have a bunch of new staff members, and they're doing all this really great outreach. And one of the people who got honored was Adam Conover, I appeared on his Adam Ruins Everything mm-hmm. episode about how to ruin murder, which was actually just how easy it is to kill people with your car. So he gave a great speech just about how important these issues are. And it was really great to hear. But I was also really inspired by a group of 5 moms from some schools on Temple Boulevard, because we talk often about Temple and the mm-hmm. problems there. And what happened when the city kind of backed down on some very necessary safety changes. So it sounds like this group of moms getting stuff done, Padres en Acción, are getting things done. They're getting lights put in, stoplights put in. They're getting high visibility crosswalks put in. They're getting all these things that kind of were left by the wayside because perhaps council members were too afraid or against certain pedestrian improvements. So I just wanted to congratulate them. And it's so good to know that the moms will get things done.
You're sort of referring to, there was a road diet proposed on Temple
yes.
that was not approved.
It was not. Well, I think they got spooked perhaps by everything that happened in other places. And there were some some legal things threatened. I don't even know what happened. But everybody seemed to want these changes. But then all of a sudden, these improvements went in, which weren't actually improvements on Temple. So a very dangerous and fast street on the high injury corridor that I use every day. So it looks like we're going to get some of those improvements that should have been put in the first place eventually.
Cool.
Mitchell Farrell's office got spooked by something? What?
Well, you remember Temple is split, so it's also anti-road diet Gil Cedillo.
Gil Cedillo, who has said LADOT is not allowed to change the street without express permission from my office. I'm stunned by both of these. I guess I do have an LA story. My landlord, that's been going on, we've been kind of dealing with for the past couple months. I actually mentioned on the show before that my oven broke. Mm-hmm. I don't even remember how I managed to work that into our news podcast. But
gas or electric?
Sort of related. It is gas. Sort of related, though. When that happened, we were trying to get it fixed. We discovered that my landlord had fired our property manager without telling any of us.
Oh.
So we had no way of getting anybody to come out and check on the oven without actually going over to her place and being like, hey, she's an elderly lady and just our oven doesn't work. She doesn't speak great English. Just trying to get somebody out and fix our oven was kind of an ordeal. Fast forward to this past week, ourselves and the other 3 tenants in our building all received a letter from our landlord's lawyer saying, do not talk to her in person. Do not contact her directly, or you're violating your lease.
Wow.
Only send her written requests. Don't call her. Don't go try and talk to her in person about things that need to be fixed.
Your landlord, if they're in the right headspace to hear something that could potentially hurt them.
Wow.
Basically, yeah. So we've cycled through three different property managers in 2019. She just, I don't know. It's hard to find good help, I guess.
Oh my God.
So we're now on a, like, don't talk to me. She kind of did the Mariah Carey, like, I don't know her thing to us, her mm-hmm. tenants. So we're trying to just, I guess, get repairs done in writing now.
That's, yikes.
Yeah.
I also have a story involving a neighbor that I mentioned to Scott. I got my door knocked on yesterday, and I've been doing a lot of canvassing, and so I'm like, I'm going to answer it this time, which I normally would never, ever do. And it was a neighbor who was asking me to sign a petition to stop the addition of stop signs to the intersection outside my house. And the stop signs would be right on this, like, blind turn that I've almost been murdered on.
Well, have we come here
many times. And so I was like, I would actually kind of like this to have, I was very scared to do this. It made me understand how, like, neighborhood peer pressure kind of works. She showed me the list of all my other neighbors who have signed and was just like, sign this right here. And it was like a fraught situation for me to say no. They had some kind of legit, like, they pulled out two parking spots on the street that one of the houses has to use exclusively because they don't have a garage space or whatever. I can understand how that would be a pain. But I think there is a middle ground that we'll be able to work out as a neighborhood. But I didn't realize that there's this, like, very intense controversy that's been going on in every house that is neighboring mine around this stop sign and these parking spots. The neighbor did say something like, I moved here, kept saying that she had been here since 74, and I moved here for a certain, like, kind of lifestyle, and if you wanted to walk around, like, move to a place where there are sidewalks.
Right.
And there are sidewalks, like, very, very close to where I live, just not immediately outside of it, and so I risk my life every time trying to get to those sidewalks, but...
I've been fighting to get a stop, you know, a four-way stop at my... corner. What is the, how did they decide they were going to give you one here? Did they?
Somebody there, one of the neighbors has had their retaining wall smashed into many right. times by people trying to go around that curve and went to the city and got it done.
Must be a different zip code.
Yeah, look, I could send this whole thing your way if you want.
That, I mean, honestly though, it is kind of like, there is no end, I guess, to the sort of Angelino, like, thought that if you build it, they will come. It also applies to stop signs, I guess. Like, putting in a stop sign is going to create more traffic. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's something that you will hear people earnestly say, good luck to you. I mean, like, good for you for standing your ground.
I felt very brave. And then I was like, let me know, because I'd love to come to the neighborhood council meeting about this. And she was like, yeah, okay, sure. I don't think that'll be necessary. I also want to share... a friend of the show's LA story, Jessica Craven, who's an Assembly Democrat and a great organizer who goes to a lot of public meetings, especially around climate issues, went to the South Coast Air Quality Management District meeting this past week.
Where's Liam Dillon on this? He said SCAG was the worst acronym, but SCACMDA.
So, yeah, that's vile.
SCACMD.
What is this? What is this organization?
So basically, we have a statewide organization that is responsible for air quality policy. That would be CARB, the Air Resources.
That might be the worst acronym.
CARB? I don't
mind it.
I like CARB.
So we have CARB that handles the execution of statewide policy around air quality. We also have individual air districts that cover just sub-regions of the state. The South Coast Air District, that is going to cover basically everything south of the San Bernardino Mountains in LA County and San Bernardino County and Riverside County and Orange County. So it's a big area covering a ton of people, probably 10 million people in that air quality district. And they have the authority to enact taxes, to put out policies, anything that would be intended to generally improve the air quality in the LA basin, you know,
so, which has the worst air quality in the United States.
In the country.
Yes.
Yes. Even so it's an important job, clearly.
Yeah. It's been getting worse, too, as we mentioned.
Yeah. Yes, as we talked about over the last, after improving for decades over the last 5 years, it has actually started to get worse. So this meeting was about how to reduce traffic around LAX and just like improve the air quality around LAX, which is very bad. And Jessica Craven got up and spoke about a potential solution. And this is how that went.
Just a very quick one. It's about the Los Angeles LAX, the situation you described about taking an hour and a half to get through the airport. I would really suggest that if you want to really check out the airport infrastructure, that you also all go and try to take the flyaway bus, which is the only public transportation available to the airport.
I'm 87 years old. You talk about flyaway bus?
But that's the only way to reduce traffic to the airport and make your ride shorter.
So old people were just going to keep up.
Oh, I thought you guys actually wanted to check out the infrastructure. I'm sorry. I thought you were curious about things that would solve the problem.
Well, I'm just...
So, not great.
Her response was great. I thought it was very...
Yeah.
Oh, I thought
and
this
for
was
context,
your job.
They were discussing probably LA exit. They were discussing like the problems with the Uber and Lyft situation. Is
well,
that, what
that
they were?
But also the chair of the board who she's talking to, Bill Burke, had just been complaining about how long it took just to get to the airport. So not even related to the pickup
in
situation.
Car.
In a car. Yes. Okay. And she said, suggest you take the flyaway bus. He immediately says, I'm 87 years old. I'm not taking, you're talking about the flyaway bus? The indignation at the suggestion of taking the flyaway bus was the response of the person in charge of managing
air quality
for Los Angeles.
This is such a nightmare. I mean, like you were saying, so the air quality in the LA basin was like the policy success story of the latter half of like local American politics, basically in the 20th century. And I guess we decided that we could just coast and put a bunch of like, what is the right word? I don't know. Like basically like fat cat cum debutantes who have like no policy experience that would like recommend them to the positions that they hold. Bill Burke he's a doctor. He is more importantly married to Yvonne Burke, former assembly member, former congresswoman, former LA County supervisor, former Metro board woman. And
they are the parents of Autumn Burke, yes. Assembly member. For the like South Bay, West Side,
Marina Del Rey area. So a well-connected individual who seems to be one of the type of people who just like goes from chair position to chair position over the course of a 40-year period and doesn't necessarily give those individual positions any attention that they might deserve on their own merits. And here we have him scoffing at a member of the public, actually interrupting a member of the public.
I found
so that he could
replying,
scoff at her.
Yeah, being very dismissive of someone who is trying to solve a problem for you. We are, our regional, or is it regional? I don't know. Our local board is way behind other ones in other parts of the state. You see what happens in like Sacramento, San Francisco, Bay Area when they have really bad air quality. There are all these measures that go into place. There's spare the air days. There's all these different messaging that gets out to people. We have really nothing like that down here. We don't take any measures or take any action when our air quality is forecasted to be bad. And we don't have any kind of clearly an authoritative group that is tackling the contributor to it, which is vehicles.
Any time that you have a board comprised of like 70s era LA politicos and also like Orange County, San Bernardino County, Riverside County, it's going to be bad. It's not going to be like a group that is forward thinking. We also see this with Metrolink, like the commuter rail for the 5-county region is not, I mean, there were discussions about using high-speed rail money to electrify Metrolink, and the chair of that board, which I believe was somebody from San Bernardino County, one of their board of supervisors at the time, came back and scoffed at the idea of getting rid of diesel locomotives in like 2015 when the rest of the world did this like decades and decades ago. So the outer counties are not a source of reliable progressive leadership, to say the least. But you're absolutely right, Alyssa. Like, they should be responsible for putting forward a vision of how we're actually going to resume on our path of cleaning up our air. they're not doing that. They're putting out the SCAC-MD is putting out the air tax proposal, which is, in my view, a total non-starter. It's another sales tax. It's like spending a ton of money on locomotives, spending a ton of money on the ports. And these are, they're proposals that are not transformative and they rely on regressive taxation again. I mean, we've already seen this money kind of like the Measure M money go towards things that are going to over time make our air quality worse instead of better. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why we would really trust these people at this point. So I guess the question is, how do you get them all off of this board and replace it with better people?
In the case of Bill Burke, that has been, so a lot of these political appointees just kind of take a little vacation on these boards and like do it for a few years and then do something else. Bill Burke has been in charge of the South Coast Air Quality Management District board for 26 years.
Wow.
He started in 1993.
Wow.
Yes. And before that, he was in gold mining for a little while. Auto racing was a big thing for him. But he has been in this position for a very, very long time. And to react that way to the suggestion of taking public transportation, especially, so something I want to point out, this is like the bus, the flyaway and various kinds of buses are an option for many seniors. And in fact, the only option.
That's what my parents take. My very elderly parents are the biggest flyaway fans because it's so easy and they're so happy to do it. They don't want to deal with like renting a car or even going through the other situation right now. They are so happy to take the flyaway and they love taking it to Union Station. It's a very fun experience for parents.
And I want to say your parents drive. They're not.
Can drive.
Yes,
yeah. But they don't like driving in
right,
LA.
Right. But like many seniors, once they don't drive anymore, the bus becomes like a great option. And like if you ride any bus, you see many, many seniors on it. And so to make that, I think it's like dangerous to make the connection between being 87 years old and the idea of taking a bus being like shocking and offensive.
I take the bus with people who are that old every day.
Every single time.
I mean, you brought up the point that he was the big ticket item on his resume is starting the LA Marathon,
yes,
which is kind of like,
he was commissioner of tennis for the 84 Olympics.
What a title.
Yeah.
Shortly before he was commissioner of tennis, you mentioned he was in gold mining. He was planning for mining in Liberia during a period of time when they had just undergone a military coup and were being run by a military junta, which, mm-hmm, I mean, is not great. And Mayor Megan Solly Wells of Culver City pointed out in response to this video that Yvonne Burke, when she was supervisor, was responsible for perpetuating the active drilling at the Inglewood oil field, as opposed to turning that into a community park. So clearly this family has ties to the, let's say, like broadly writ, the extractive economy that are maybe not, don't maybe suggest that they are the biggest allies of like greening the air or the environment. 26 years as chair of this board. Mm-hmm. Hang it up, Bill.
Also, I just wanted to point out one more thing about the flyaway. I think this data came out after maybe we recorded last week's show, but there was measurable increase in flyaway ridership. Not a lot, even the numbers we were all kind of like, good, but it could have been so much better. Imagine if they had put all these changes into place and announced them way before, mm-hmm, the Thanksgiving weekend. Like maybe they'll do it again around the Christmas travel, New Year's travel season, but like, the flyway is an incredibly important tool and it should be deployed widely and funded well. And if someone who is in charge of what is supposed to be like a traffic and air quality mitigation, yes, tactic being, mm-hmm, deployed around the airport, if they can't recognize that, then they have no purpose on this board.
If you think about it, like the thing that we talked about last week, like after Thanksgiving weekend, when LAX tweeted out that they were expecting a quarter of a million vehicles, was it? Yeah. A quarter of a million coming through the airport area during that, like it was on either a 1 or 2 day period. Like that's an environmental disaster.
15% of the population of Los Angeles basically was going to be driving through that, like eighth of a mile.
It's kind of like auto racing. Maybe that's why he likes it.
You need a an airport that recognizes that that is an environmental disaster, not one that is like, well, what are you going to do? Take the fucking bus? Like this is absurd. That's his response. But that's exactly what it was.
Yeah. Speaking of hanging it up, Peter Lin, the head of LASA, the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority, announced this week on Monday that he is stepping down effective at the end of this month. The position is going to be taken over by Heidi Marston, the chief program officer, as an interim director. Peter Lin had been doing the job for 5 years. He watched it go, this organization go through some very dramatic changes.
Yep.
And was often blamed by elected officials for not doing enough as the population of people who are homeless. I mean, that's the headline. While he was in charge of this organization, the population of people who are homeless in Los Angeles grew dramatically. Mm-hmm. And yet, so there's been a lot of speculation over why Peter Lin left. Was he fired? Did he resign? He said he resigned, which is very plausible. I think it's an incredibly stressful job. He also got in a car crash, I think earlier this year, that had kind of, he had a concussion for a couple months that kind of put him out of commission for a while.
He had taken a leave of absence. He hadn't been heading it up for a few months, right? Like it had been,
I think he had taken the leave of absence and then come back. For a bit.
That's what I mean.
And
but yes, he had not been, yes, probably Heidi had been stepping in during, yes, this whole time.
But he said it was during that time that he decided that it was maybe time to step away. The timing is interesting. It is right before the 2020 count. Which, yep, I think is on, right, January 21st, around there. And so Heidi Marston will be in charge of that, but I think is probably already supervising it to begin with. LASA is an interesting organization where, like, all the power to do something about this issue is theoretically that, like, the city and county both use LASA as, like, the arm through which they can exert influence over homelessness. And yet it is totally powerless to do anything. Yeah. It's just basically like a central, like a clearinghouse for all the different service providers that are available. They just try to send people who are homeless to this provider or that provider. But for the most part, there's very little that they're able to do. They've also been suffering from having to scale up dramatically in a very short time after we passed Measure H,
right,
which was over $1 billion for service money from the county. Most of that went to LASA, to building out LASA.
Yeah, this says, this LA Times article, I was like kind of shocked by this, but of course it was true, that the money pouring in meant he had to triple his staff,
yeah,
almost like instantaneously.
Who's the byline on this?
So Doug Smith that. And Ben Oreskes, right, friends of the show.
Yeah, so the LASA has been going through a rapid expansion. I think that they were sort of chronically underfunded, especially following the recession. This, yep, was an area where we took the rather short-sighted tack of expecting that we could cut services, and also that I think in retrospect, we should have expected that homelessness would become an increasing problem even after the immediate effects of the recession wore, yes, off.
And this was when Peter Lin took office, by the way. It, yes, was in 2014, right, during a period where there were, whatever, 40,000 people were homeless in all of LA County, but it was still not really taken seriously as a problem. And I think around that time, there were only about 19 actual outreach workers for the entire county.
Incredible. This is, if we talk about LASA, like, I think it's important to note that, and this is something well documented, the way that LASA took the form that it currently has is because LA City and County, back in like the 80s, late 80s and early 90s, were in the absence of a clear mechanism for them to collaborate on issues of homelessness. And we've seen this a lot in Los Angeles because of our fragmented power structure here, the many different cities that we have. There was a lot of room for the city and county to push on each other and say, this should be, you know, the nature of homelessness being essentially transitory. This should be the city's responsibility. City would say this should be the county's responsibility, and nobody actually was owning the administrative structures, yeah, to address homelessness. But now we end up in a situation where the administration exists, but like you're saying, Hayes, it doesn't have the power to actually, like 19 caseworkers for a population of even 1,000 people would be like absurd, but it's actually
that was
much
back
higher.
In 2014. It's more now.
It's more now.
Yeah. But still not even approaching the need.
Right.
For all the blame being thrown around to Peter Lin, he was widely known as someone who was doing everything he could to solve this problem, was a passionate and compassionate person, like the right kind of person to be holding this office. And I would say in terms of, if we are actually allocating blame for this issue, I wouldn't say he's in the top 200 of the people that should be held responsible
for this. At least 13 and perhaps 14 spots.
all the city council members are lining up. I saw in that same article a quote from Paul Krikorian saying, like, it's time for Lhasa to move in a very different direction. Like, we need, like, dynamic new leader. If that can be achieved through dynamic new leadership, so be it. If it instead must be done through extensive restructuring of the agency, then this is the time to do
it. Yeah, I mean, even in the exit interview with Peter Lin and there was that other big Anderson Cooper homelessness story, which I thought was actually quite good. I don't know if you saw it. It was like, had people talking about, you know, solutions, and we can talk about other stuff that happened at a national level. But even he said, like, we can do our job as great as we can, but until we have more housing stock to put people in, what can we do?
Peter Lin said that.
Yeah. It was just like, if we can't get the subsidies to get this built, we need to build it ourselves. You know, we need to build it.
So. And he says in this article, it talks about what he's going to do now. He's going to stay in the field, and he says he's going to work on advocating for new housing models to address affordability. And housing stock types that will be by nature deeply affordable.
And that's what I thought was kind of great. I mean, if that's what he can apply his knowledge to building, or not just building, but spearheading, because that is the problem. We have to get subsidies for this, a certain type of housing. But then, for example, with what happened, you know, in Crenshaw recently with the development that the city council members voted down, they said, we don't want this here because it's not affordable enough. Well, what could we do to make these projects more affordable? And we need new models.
Yes.
I'm actually very curious about Krikorian's quote. Like, what?
What does he mean? That was why I got lost in the conversation. But what would that mean?
Like finger wagging, I think, at Lhasa. It's just to say, like, well, we screwed this one up.
How about we give the council districts full, you know, authority?
Krikorian, council district 2, council member. He covers
North Hollywood
and a lot of places that are wealthier than North Hollywood in the valley. This is an interesting kind of response to a dedicated public servant leaving, kind of insinuating that, like you're saying, that the fault is Lhasa's, and that maybe the fault, it's like, why is the fault Lhasa's? Is it because of Peter Lin, or is it because of the structure of the agency? I don't know. Like, what would it mean for there to be dynamic leadership at Lhasa?
He was a fairly dynamic leader. I mean, he wasn't as well known, I think, as he should have been. Like, I think he attempted to make himself kind of the face of trying to fix homelessness in Los Angeles. I'm not sure if that really worked. Dynamic leadership counts just in terms of messaging and getting people on board. It's something that the city does badly because it is purely a political issue to solve this problem. Yeah. But restructuring for Lhasa, I really don't think is what we need right now, beyond possibly So there's been a lot of talk about setting up a FEMA style emergency powers for the mayor's office. It would make more sense to me giving those powers to Lhasa, letting Lhasa build.
Yeah.
Which right now they can't do. Like, letting Lhasa select lots and say, this is the kind of project that we're going to put here. The thing that worries me about that is it does depend on who you put in charge of Lhasa. If you put a Bill Burke style, not even career politician, just career board occupier, and just someone who is a political favor, you're not going to get anything done from that.
Or even somebody who has formerly held local government office, the elected office in particular, that they're going to come in and they're connected to, say, the Paul Krikorians or whoever, who are going to say, okay, yeah, just don't cite it in my district, you know, that kind of thing. I do, you know, cynically, what I think is, what a restructure does is it restarts the clock.
Yes.
If you restructure Lhasa, then you can say, well, of course things aren't getting better right now, but 5 years from now, after I'm out of office, I, Paul Krikorian, then things will be totally different. And if they're not, you know, I'm going to be in Sacramento, so I don't care what you say at that point.
It's amazing. But H and HHH could theoretically have done that same clock restarting. but they give themselves so much, such a long leash in terms of, oh, it just takes years. It takes years to get these things online. It does take a while, but that is not extended to Lhasa.
No.
That same leash is like to Lhasa. They say, like, why haven't you done anything with this money?
Of course not. Like, they're the deep state Lhasa. They should have already been working on this.
Speaking of Paul Krikorian, but more directly, John Lee, council member for District 12. We've talked about him. He won a special election as a Republican against the Democrat Lorraine Lundquist up in the Northwest Valley area, Northridge, Porter Ranch, that part of the city. John Lee has been incredibly busy this week. He is going on an absolute tear at city council. Three headlines, notably. He wants to rip out a Great Streets project on Reseda, on Reseda Boulevard. He took the one supportive housing, housing for formerly homeless people, that the one project in his district, he took it and shrunk it by, I think, a floor and like 15 units or something like that. And is still not satisfied with the size of it, wants it to be smaller. And he also put forward a motion wanting to give the city authority to arrest street vendors again.
Jesus.
Which they currently are, like, it's if you violate the street vending rules right now, it's a citation.
Yeah.
He wants to be able to arrest them again, which has life-ending consequences for someone who is undocumented, for example.
Absolutely.
Like sending them into the penal system for a street vending violation. That's the reason that we changed these rules in the first place.
After a years-long effort to do so.
Yes. So let's start with the Great Streets thing. What's the story with this, Alyssa?
As we know, there are improvements recommended for a council district. The council member can say we don't want those. Mm-hmm. And this is a little bit different than the Vision Zero project that I was talking about earlier on Temple Street. This is the Great Streets program through the mayor's office where every grant cycle or whatever, they give out money for 15 different projects, one in each council district. And this, the Reseda project is interesting because it's in Bob Blumenfeld's district and then also in John Lee's district. So it could be this really transformative corridor. And I was just checking in with Investing in Place, Jessica Meany, who was on the show 2 weeks ago. That is coming, though all those improvements are coming up for a vote. I think they just tweeted out all the information from Investing in Place, which was so great because this is one of the best Great Streets transformation. They're going all the way. They got tons of great money. It's going to be, I actually think the one in Blumenfeld's district is a complete streets program, which is just a separate from the two. But anyway, just to show you, this could be this amazing transformative corridor through a very dangerous part of the valley where people really do need other options to get around. Anyway, so what he wants to do is, I think the argument was that it was confusing, the reconfigurement of putting parked cars between driving people and biking people was confusing, which I think is code word for we don't want bike lanes here.
Yeah. and he put forward a recommendation to improve the project or return to the original street
which
design.
As somebody said when I tweeted something, the original design was a horse path in 1901. So let's put the dirt road back in.
This is sort of a test of the way city council tends to operate, which is if an improvement or any kind of property is in your district as a council member, you have total authority over it. And if he wants to rip this out, he can do it and all the other council members will fall in line. I would expect if they were to actually do that, it would create a huge uproar among the cycling and pedestrian activists in the city that the rest of the council does not really want. My guess is that there's an understanding that this is a political move on John Lee's part. So he, as he heads into re-election, immediately after his special election, can go to his constituents and say, like, I tried, like, I tried to get rid of this road diet that you hate, but the rest of the council, oh, these Democrats, like, they won't do it.
Yeah.
The thing that is kind of bewildering to me, and again, this is just how city council works, but both this, the Great Street, getting rid of the Great Streets improvement and getting back the authority to arrest vendors, both of those motions were seconded by Paul Krikorian, who, and again, it's like, it's just an automatic that somebody on the council will second these things, and you have to get 1 second to have your motion be filed, basically.
Right.
But where's the, like, why would you allow your name to be on either of these things? Especially, I feel like, after it took so long to get the rules changed around vending, you're going to have your signature be on an initiative to be able to arrest these people.
I don't feel like the council members really care about, like, having their name publicly associated with this. I feel like what they care more about is whatever personal relationship they have with somebody's office, and they are making some sort of, either they really agree that this should be done, or they have something that they also want seconded and don't see it as toxic enough to not include it as some sort of motion and second swap, basically, which is kind of stunning. Like the thing that we're talking about, the specific motion that John Lee put forward, I think, was to include in the city's legislative program for state recommendation that we would not support the changes that were made to state law that went into effect earlier this year about having a compliant street vending program, and that we would essentially say to Sacramento, we want the authority to start arresting people again because arresting people is good for for some reason. So John Lee and Paul Krikorian putting their names on that is sort of stridently anti, it's not only stridently anti-homeless, it's also stridently in opposition to progressive governance that's coming out of the state capitol.
Mm-hmm. And it's the same kind of thing. Michael Kohlhaas was sharing this on Twitter, and he digs through all these city records and shares these motions and other files, and he identified it correctly. It's the same thing of John Lee just wants to be able to say, this is what I'm working on. I'm trying to get rid of these insidious elements that you, the Republicans of my district, hate. Like, look at what I'm working on. It will never happen. They're not going to go back and undo this work.
They might.
I cannot allow myself to believe
that. It's hard to imagine. But I do think, though, that I think that you're right. I think that Michael Kohlhaas is right about this. The importance for John Lee is pretty clear. It's hard to also reconcile, like, Paul Krikorian supporting his effort to remain in office this way. But the purpose for John Lee is pretty clearly his district overlaps in a big way with Katie Hill's former district. There is going to be a lot of Democratic attention focused on that exact geographic area and keeping the seat that Katie Hill successfully flipped blue, and also getting those same Democratic voters to vote down ballot and get John Lee the fuck out of office. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty obvious why John Lee is leaning into, like, a harder Republicanism as much as possible. But yeah, like, why are sitting city council members who are not John Lee helping him do that?
Yeah. The Chatsworth Project, this is Topanga Apartments, which we've talked about before, the supportive housing project, went from 64 units to 54. It lost one floor. And unsurprisingly, the neighborhood is still against it. This got the developers absolutely nothing in terms of neighborhood goodwill. We just lost 10 units of desperately needed supportive housing. And John Lee still doesn't support it either.
Yeah.
So why engage with, like, the only acceptable outcome is getting rid of the project entirely? So what the concessions are pointless.
Have you heard any comment, maybe Alyssa, maybe you will know whether or not this has happened, but have you heard any comment from Garcetti's office about the Great Streets projects, which were a cornerstone of his early tenure as mayor?
Yeah, I think it's to keep reminding everybody, this is the mayor's initiative. And these have been there's many completed and they're great and they're all over the city, but some of the most controversial street reconstruction projects, or whatever you want to call it, reconfiguration, have been Great Streets Project. The Mar Vista Road Diet that goes down Venice Boulevard, the very short,
protected
bike lane. That's a Great Streets Project. That was from the mayor's office. And you never hear the mayor coming out to defend these particular projects. I mean, you don't hear him talk. I don't know if he'll chime in on this one, but this is a perfect example of when somebody comes out to challenge these things, the mayor needs to come up and say, this is my program. This is not even like LADOT trying to do things to make it safer. We're trying to make this an amazing place for you to live and work and shop and go.
I feel like I am now just like the person who harps on this every week, but like, I don't know. Like this was one of his signature proposals from early in his tenure. He doesn't appear to care that a council member is now trying to nuke a hard won thing that came out of this process. He doesn't seem like he actually cares what happens to them.
And it was supported at the time, just to give someone credit. Mitch Englander was very outspoken. He was the Republican who John Lee was chief of staff for.
It was never a controversial thing. No, he was one of the successful ones.
He was very supportive. I think it's the longest bike lane in the city.
Yeah.
And at the same time, the people who were pushing back on it were Democrats. Paul Koretz was ripping out the bike improvements on Westwood Boulevard. Curran Price, like on My Figueroa stuff, was sort of a pain in the ass.
Cedillo.
Cedillo, of course. But this one ended up being a huge success. It was his initiative. And now it is being threatened. I guess it's because they don't really take it seriously. But where's the messaging? Where's the like positive messaging? If John Lee is allowed to talk about this as a nuisance and a threat to drivers or whatever, where's the pushback?
I don't even think that that's why.
That could have stopped a lot of what happened to Mike Bonin and this whole effort. If the city had come in and corrected some of the messaging and like stepped forward and been like, this is us. This has nothing to do with him.
Imagine.
Like, this is like what we, no, I mean, not just the mayor's office. Because I think LADOT ended up taking the heat and also Mike Bonin, but it was actually the mayor's office. He should have defended him.
Waiting in the wings. No, I think that that's why. I mean, if Garcetti were going to have defended any of these projects, it would have been at that point in time when the whole West Side shitstorm was going on. But the fact that he was willing to let Bonin take the fall for that and basically hasn't said a word about either Vision Zero or the Great Streets Initiative since then is indicative of,
it would have been
political cowardice.
Comparing him to Anne Hidalgo. Now, my new question is, I think he's still chair of the climate mayors and C40 at the same time. So is he going for some kind of
Anne Hidalgo,
mayor EGOT or something like that for climate mayors?
Probably.
Yeah.
he was at the local... I just imagine Garcetti basically as a living version of that Ed and Eddie meme where the guy's just looking out the window as it's raining, just staring at Pete Buttigieg full time.
Speaking different languages on the campaign trail. No, but the coming out on the biking thing would be so powerful. Like at that ribbon cutting for the spring in Maine bike lanes 2 weeks ago, that would have been a huge deal and very easy for him to just show up and say, I want to do more of these. And we need just a little tiny boost from the climate mayor, too.
Speaking of that, this week, Alyssa, you wrote something about the climate mayors are meeting in Iowa. Is that where they are?
They're not meeting this week, but they created a new steering committee. The big UN climate summit was happening in Madrid this week.
And you wrote a piece for Curbed saying all these climate mayors, here are all the highways that they are trying to widen in their cities, like different climate mayors, naming and shaving. It was so good.
The list was much longer. I mean, that wasn't even all of them.
Imagine my shock to search Garcetti and that piece and not find it.
To his credit, the High Desert Freeway was canceled. And I don't know if that is, maybe he was doing some great behind the scenes work, but that was one of the biggest and most horrible projects that has now been shelved. We still have some problems like the 710 widening down by the port, but I think that'll get...
Is the 5 still being widened currently?
That's more towards Orange County, but I don't know if I would place that squarely on him.
And he was there for the widening of the 405.
Yeah, I mean, there was
$1.6 billion.
Damage has been done. Mistakes
that was before he was a climate mayor.
Before anybody cared about that. But the list was much longer. But it's true. We have to start thinking about these things holistically and regionally. And it's not just saying that's a DOT. That's not my responsibility. It is your responsibility. And from great streets to freeways.
That sounds a lot like things that Mayor Eric Garcetti has said. Traffic doesn't stop at city borders.
Well, if the mayors think that they can all work together to reduce emissions, why can't they stop a freeway widening on the suburbs of their city? Right.
Let's talk about what city and county officials are allocating resources toward. The Supreme Court is weighing right now, currently, they are deciding whether to make a decision on Martin versus Boise, a case that was resolved by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that we've talked about a lot on this show. This was a complaint by a group of people who were homeless in Boise, Idaho, saying it is cruel and unusual punishment to make it illegal for people to sleep on the street in a city where there is not enough housing or shelter for people to go to instead. They won the case. The plaintiffs won the case. It made it illegal in Los Angeles. We had rules that basically made it illegal to sleep on the streets. Those were swept away. It's now federal law that you are not allowed to ban people from sleeping on the street. And the city and the county are reacting to this by asking what is basically at this point Donald Trump's Supreme Court to weigh in on it and give the city and county the authority again to arrest people for sleeping on the sidewalk. Now, just to like clarify exactly what this means, there are still rules about sidewalk sleeping that you are not allowed to violate. ADA, the American Disabilities Act, says that you need 3 feet of clearance. So you're not allowed to fully block the sidewalk. People still have to get by. There are like plenty of rules around like specific locations where you can't sleep that the city is still trying to expand. But like it's not, you can't like sleep in the actual street, for example. There are like lots of rules over where you can exist as is. The city wants to expand those and they want to make it something, again, that you can arrest people for, which used to be a huge pipeline of people who are homeless into the prison system, into getting citations that they can never get out of. So we talked about how the county a few months ago voted 3-2. Mark Ridley Thomas, Janice Hahn, and Catherine Barger all voted to go to the Supreme Court about this. Hilda Solis and Sheila Kuehl voted not to do it. Mike Feuer, the city attorney, is co-signing. Who else is jumping on this initiative, Scott?
And we should say by sending it to the Supreme Court, you are doing it at a time when the chances are quite good that it will not be a favorable outcome for homeless individuals.
The only hope.
They don't want it to be.
Right. I'm just reiterating. Absolutely. It's not like we want justice to be served. This is actually like perhaps a strategic move to make sure that this is, you know, goes a certain way.
Well, let's see who else is supporting it and let's have that be the judge.
There are an enormous number of individual groups that are filing on with amicus briefs on the side of the Boise government, trying to get increased power to remove homeless individuals without providing services for them. But if we look at the list of people that are filing these briefs, there are a lot of names that stand out. We have the Brentwood Community Council. We have the People Concern and Weingart Center Association. We have Venice Stakeholders Association. We have
This was the group that basically created Venice Fight Back.
Right. And is putting those planters out.
Yes.
Illegally.
To fight the homeless shelter in that area. Yes.
Los Angeles Area Chamber of Commerce and Central City Association. We have the State Association of Counties and 33 California counties and cities, not including Los Angeles, which is filing separately, although probably including the County of Los Angeles. We have the State Sheriff's Association, the Police Chiefs Association, the Peace Officers Association. We have, just the City of Los Angeles. We have, and then a raft of other Western states and downtown associations, but an incredible number of groups just from the LA area.
And the lot that you would expect, a lot of police unions and city officials and stuff. The two that stand out are the Weingart Center and the People Concern, which provide services for people who are homeless. The CELA, the group that I work with, works with People Concern a lot. We hire their case managers to help get people into housing. This is, I think, a very damaging act by those groups, but it comes out of a desire to divert, like basically to arrest and cite more people, to divert them into services. The People Concerned in the Weingart Center do a lot of clearing tickets. So like you get a ticket for one of these things, you can go to them, they'll clear it. And, you know, like especially if you like go into treatment or mm-hmm. get the kind of services that you need. This is the kind of thing we talked about on the show. Former assembly member Mike Gatto proposing funneling more people through the penal system in order to get them into services. It doesn't work. We've been doing it forever.
Yep.
It damages way more lives than it helps. It's always like a temporary fix.
And there's like there's no allowance in the Gatto ballot measure. And I feel like there's never an allowance made in the minds of people who think like Mike Gatto that being homeless is not a criminal act. And there are serious external repercussions. Even if you're trying to give people services that way, there are major repercussions on those people's lives of treating them as criminals.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think this is most useful in terms of like talking about energy and like where the city is focusing on its energy on solving this problem. This is going to cost a lot of money. The whole like city and county apparatus mobilizing to get this case to the Supreme Court. Yeah. If they decide to consider the case, once Martin versus Boise is overturned, we will be spending again so much more money the way we used to on arresting people, sending them through the jail system. This is all money and resources that could be spent on generating the kind of housing and services that we will actually solve this problem. What they're pitching doing is going back to the solutions that have demonstrably failed, that got us into this situation in the first place. Like Mark Ridley Thomas talks all the time about like, this is a crisis. We need to like face this like as if it's a crisis and explore like hard solutions. But he's talking about the ones that we already tried, that tried and failed for decades.
Yeah.
It's lazy at best. It's incredibly immoral at worst, like to go back to this old way of doing things. And we were supposed to find out on Friday whether or not the Supreme Court was going to take the case. But now I get like sometime early next week, maybe by the time you listen to this, it will have come out. Very scary. Also very scary that it's happening at the same time as Donald Trump's administration appointed a new homelessness czar, Robert Marbut, who is basically a roving consultant who goes to different cities and tells them not to feed people.
Yeah.
And has them create jail shelters where people have to earn the right to sleep inside at the shelter, or else they have to sleep in a jail facility. But out of doors, the kind of large scale shelters that Trump is talking about forcing people who are homeless into.
Yeah.
So basically the strategy is make it completely illegal to sleep on the street, bulldoze the encampments and say you can if you're going to exist in Los Angeles, you can go to one of these facilities and like only stay there on like an airfield in Hawthorne or whatever. Or get out of the city entirely.
Yeah.
It is going to create, that is basically the definition of a concentration camp. What it is. And if you're not allowed to exist outside of it, it is a prison facility.
Yep.
And it is going to, if this happens, cause incredibly widespread harm to people. And we're basically going to get all the visuals and the human tragedy that you see in the border camps right now are going to be in Los Angeles.
In our city limits.
Yes.
We honestly, this, you kind of wonder, like, if just as an example, obviously there are other areas where the federal government is poised to do tremendous harm to homeless individuals, but you could easily see the federal government signing on as an amicus to the exact same brief that our Democratic county boards and city councils have signed on to,
like
hoping for the same
the
same
exact
result. This
new guy testifying, right? Yeah. He'll be like the new like homeless expert and he'll testify as an expert.
So you almost want to like our city council, our county board of supervisors should be forced to reckon with the fact that they are on the same side of this issue as the Trump administration and that they're hoping for a result that is distinctly similar to what the Trump administration wants to happen. Why would you not assume the worst about all of these people, especially a person like Robert Marbut, whose purpose in life is to it's not even like telling homeless people that they should like pull themselves up by their bootstraps. It's saying that they're They're basically calling them surplus population in, you know, in so many words. Like they are saying these people are a drag on the economy. They should get out or be jailed.
It's hiding them. That's the only goal. Is making them actually invisible. He has, this guy Robert Marbot has talked in the past about how he doesn't approve of the housing first model, creating as much housing as possible for people, which would accomplish the same goal, by the way, in terms of getting people off the streets. Right. It would just put them into much more humane conditions.
Yeah.
He says he believes in the housing fourth model.
What's 1, 2, 3?
I don't know what 1, 2, 3 is.
Put them in a giant tent.
I mean, basically.
Housing fourth.
Get them cleaned up, or they have to be off drugs, right? It's all these things, right? That's the belief, is that you have to be clean before you're allowed to be housed.
Yes.
Right. This is though, I think I personally have become increasingly more concerned about the coming Olympics in Los Angeles, because, mm-hmm. you know, Donald Trump has already given so much of his time and attention to saying that Los Angeles and San Francisco are worldwide disgraces, not because of the way that we have constructed a society without a safety net that leads people into homelessness, but because there are homeless people who are visible in front of like pretty buildings and pretty like rich people.
The best doorways.
The best doorways. Yes, exactly.
This is where maybe where the re-election, Trump's re-election, like I would say it matters most for LA in terms of immigration policy and policy around homelessness, as like the 2020 to 2024, like the ramp up begins to the Olympics, and like federal authorities start coming into Los Angeles and exerting even more influence than they already do on our population.
They're already talking about building concentration camps in fucking Hawthorne. Yeah. Like it's like if you think about the way that the world stage is used by would-be autocrats like Xi Jinping, you know, like the way that the presence of cameras from around the world is used is not, it's not beneficial to these leaders like Donald Trump to have all of these cameras coming and seeing Los Angeles, the city, as it really is. Mm-hmm. Like you said, they would much rather make all of the problems invisible. If that means abrogating people's civil rights, Donald Trump, I really don't think cares about that much. And we haven't seen from local leaders that they're intending on putting up a fight at all.
Putting up a fight. Would you like to guess what Garcetti's response was to the Marbot appointment? Guess.
Was there one?
We welcome solutions, leaders.
Innovation.
That is
innovation.
Exactly right. He told reporters that he welcomes, quote, anybody to this fight of ending homelessness. I don't care what people have done in the past, what they've said. Garcetti said, I'm interested in what they're willing to do. They've said what they're willing to do.
Yeah.
They've said it over and over again. What Whoa. The fuck is wrong with you that you are enabling this kind of rhetoric that is so damaging to the problem that you're supposedly trying to solve? Saying that you welcome anybody to this fight as they're talking about coming into your city, like
undoing the policies that you have put in place to solve this problem,
yes.
basically undermining everything that you
policies
have
that
done.
Will murder people, yeah. forced dislocation of people. We welcome all solutions. Come to our city.
Yeah.
Where we want to collaborate
fighting
with
the
anybody.
Same fight, like is kind of a curious thought to put out into the world. Like, only under the broadest possible construction could you say that people who want to end homelessness by actually providing services and giving people the opportunity and the right to live, like, I mean, just lives of dignity, are fighting the same fight as people who would willingly vanish those people off of the face of the earth. And so, like, yeah, so I agree that Garcetti has not shown any indication that he just, like, even has a conception of the dangers that exist for people who are unhoused, for people who are housing insecure, for people who are in the country illegally, by welcoming the federal government to work with him. Like, I mean, it's kind of like the saying that the federal government is working with Eric Garcetti on this issue is like saying that a fucking fly on the back of a hippo is working in the same direction as the hippo. It just doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. But we again see that he doesn't really have even words to give to the people who are endangered by this.
And it's abundantly clear that it's going to be up to the people that live in this city to push back on it after that effort has been totally neglected by the elected officials.
Meanwhile, people, it's cold and it's wet and people will continue to die on our streets. An estimated 3 people per day will die as long as we continue to play this game.
Yeah. I have to say, like, we talked a lot when you mentioned earlier about the homeless count, the great homeless count being coming up soon. It made me think that we've been talking about this now throughout the entire year. And mm-hmm. earlier, around May, it was very clear that the city leadership was putting off releasing the homeless count because they didn't want to deal with the bad press. And I feel like now they've succeeded in turning it into an actual nonstop year-long cycle. Mm-hmm. Like, that news cycle has never stopped. We had the count, then we had where is the result of the count, then we had the results are in, they're bad, nobody knows what to do. And now we're back to the next count and still nobody is doing anything.
Yeah. And a few, like even a couple months ago, I feel like I was saying that the rhetoric had changed around how we were treating homelessness to become more based on like actual solutions and more compassion. But I've changed my mind about that. I think it has swung back when it comes to the Supreme Court, like the city and county going to Trump Supreme Court, asking for the right to arrest these people.
What I will say is that they are succeeding in radicalizing activists. On behalf of the homelessness. And I don't know if that, I'm sure that that's not their intention, but that's the only thing that I've seen really change.
Yep. We gotta go. Thank you for listening to LA Podcast. We'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.